This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That we are off and running with another episode of Believe in Kentucky. We got Jalen Whitlow, the QB, back with us in the fold. Aaron Gershon from the Cat's Paws. Jay, man, we'll jump back at you. It's been a little minute since you've been on with us. How you doing, man? And glad you're back with us this evening, man.
I'm good, man. Glad to be back on. I enjoy doing this on Wednesday nights, man. So good to connect with the Big Blue Nation and whatnot, and talk about all the things we got on the horizon. But yeah, man, just glad to be back on, man. And ready to get this thing started.
That's it. AG, man, I guess you'll be at Kentucky Proud Park, hopefully for the next several days.
Yeah.
This weekend, got Western Michigan starting it off Friday at noon, right?
That's right. Noon game against Western Michigan, and then, Indiana State and Illinois also in that regional. It is definitely a tough draw, I think, here in Lexington. I mean, Western Michigan's a game you should probably win, but Indiana State's a really good team that kind of got snubbed from hosting that we'll get into a little bit. And then Illinois obviously won the Big Ten, which, you think of the Big Ten with football, basketball, they're kind of the 1A, or I should say 1B, 2 to the SEC. It's not quite that way in baseball, but still, they did win that league. So have some really good things going offensively there. So tough regional, but I'll be there all weekend. Hopefully next weekend as their road to Omaha runs through Kentucky Proud Park for the first time in school history.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. That's the history that's being made right now. I think the first, if I'm not mistaken, first time they won 40 games in two consecutive seasons. So right. That's
first time they're in the NCAA tournament in back-to-back years.
Mm-hmm. And home field throughout, sounds like, the NFL, number one seed, but they are the number two overall seed nationally behind Tennessee. So home field until they get to Omaha, as long as they're playing, they're at home. Until they can get to the College World Series, which is the goal, if they can win that regional and super regional. So,
yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. We put the clip out on YouTube where we had Trevor Fitz on, the director of player development. I think that might have been an episode you weren't on with us, Jay. Aaron, it was me and Jay. But, the question then going into the season, what do you need to do to start stacking good seasons on good seasons, and why do you think you're in position to do so? And you know, he listed the roster construction. He talked about the schedule. He talked about experienced players. And this was, I don't know if they'd even played a game yet, or they might have had one season under their belt. And it's played out that way. Here they are, you know, with another good season and more SEC wins than they've ever had. And, you know, co-champs of the East. So they went out and did what he said they were going to do. And they're, of course, looking for more. They put themselves in position to get more, and they're looking for more this weekend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're in the best position they've ever been to, you know, finally get to Omaha. And again, two weekends at home if you can get to the second weekend. But man, they got a really tough draw. And I think, first of all, it's important to explain. There are a lot of people like, oh, why did Kentucky get Indiana State, right? Indiana State's a team that probably could have hosted, you know, number 10 in the RPI. They didn't play too many quad one games, you know, playing in the Missouri Valley. But still, they're a team that made supers last year. They're a team that was, you know, probably snubbed from hosting. And they were actually supposed to host supers last year, too. And there was issues with the field or renovations or something. They couldn't push back, so they ended up having to go to TCU, and they got swept down there. But yeah,
they got robbed last year. They got jobbed. Yeah, kinda.
They sure did. So, one, they're going to be out for a vengeance because of that. But, two, you know, Indiana State I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. So how the tournament works with seeding, it's not like the basketball tournament where, you know, they go and seed every single team. Like Kentucky this year, I think they were the number 9 overall seed in the basketball tournament, which would have made them the highest 3 seed. It's not like that in baseball. They seed, you know, the teams 1 seeds, 2 seeds, 3 seeds, and 4s. They do rank the top 16. But then where they put the 2s and the 3s and the 4s, it's all usually geographic. I mean, there's some cases where, you know, an East Coast team will have to go west and vice versa. Florida, you know, is going to Stillwater, Oklahoma instead of Tallahassee. You know, that's going to happen every now and then. But usually they make an effort to keep teams, you know, in a reasonable travel distance. So Indiana State's a team that's, you know, 2.5-3 hours down the road in Indiana. Illinois is only, you know, 6 hours away or so from here. And then Western Michigan, a little bit of a hike, but still, you know, a doable travel, not a long flight if they're flying. Not a crazy, crazy bus trip if they're bussing. So that's why they got Indiana State. And it's going to be tough because they can really pitch. I think their team ERA is, I have it in front of me, is 29th best in the country. Their K per nine is 10th best in the country. They have 4 all-conference pitchers, the pitcher of the year in their league. And their lineup is loaded with veteran guys who have been there and done that. So this is a really tough draw. I don't think that should be overlooked. But like you said, Vinny, Kentucky has set themselves up where it runs through their home ballpark. No one knows it better than them. They seem to always really play well at Kentucky Proud Park. I mean, they only lost one series all year at KPP. That was, of course, Tennessee. And those were, you know, one of the games they lost was a really close game. They blew. So they easily could have won every series they played in the building. They lost to Kennesaw, too. So I can't overstate that. Since they started rolling, they haven't lost a series at home. So the ball is in their court. No pun intended. But they need to go, you know, take care of business because this won't be easy.
Absolutely. Baseball, UK baseball just tweeted out that Coach Minge is going to be making an appearance in the morning. Let's see.
I actually saw Coach Minge at Starbucks today. Believe it or really? Not. Yeah, I bumped into him. I was hanging out with my buddy Jacob Polachek from KSR and Sean Smith from Go Big Blue Country, hanging out with those guys. And Minge was there as well. It's kind of funny.
I feel like you bump into everybody, man.
At that Starbucks, I bumped into Mark Stoops, Craig Skinner like 6 or 7 times, and Brennan Canada. And that's just the list off the top of my head. It seems the Starbucks on Ashland and High is a very popular if you want to see someone who's affiliated with UK Athletics, you might have a chance if you hang out there every now and then.
So 8:30 to 9:30 to Euclid Kroger tomorrow for Coach Minge, meeting fans and promoting the postseason and all that good stuff. Kind of a little get everybody riled up, get everybody fired up that aren't, and you know, make some awareness for those that, you know, casual fans. Oh yeah, okay. You know, well, I'm not going to Railbird, I'll go to the ball game or whatever. So Yeah, it's because that crowded everything going on again weekend.
It is another crowded weekend here, but I think they prepared for it this time. I haven't heard any issues with there not being hotels. I think, you know, after last year, you probably realized this baseball program was worthy of, you know, playing it safe and reserving what you need, and they got it done. So haven't heard there's any accommodation issues this time around. Plus, last year was bad, and my biggest complaint more so, though, because I attended UK obviously fairly recently. Kentucky is some of it, since they, I think they started opening the new dorms in 2016. I think it was right before you were there, or right after you were there, Jalen. They're some of the best, and I visited a bunch of schools when I was looking. I visited schools with my brother. My brother obviously goes to FAU, as we've talked about here. UK's dorms are like the best I've ever seen. You're talking Tempur-Pedic beds, because Tempur-Pedic is based here in Lexington. And they still gave them some of the older dorms on campus. That's what bothered me last year. I was like, you can't at least give them the nice dorms that are comparable to some hotels, honestly. That's what bothered me. It was like, you had a chance to showcase, like, man, UK's got some of the best dorms in the country. That's a selling point for students you're trying to get to enroll. When they're just going through their normal high school decision process, non-athletics wise, and you drop the ball on that. So I was more upset with that than anything else, just being a recent UK grad.
Jay, man, you got anything, like you said, you got any bullets in the chamber, just unleash them on us, man, just whenever.
I got you. You have to live in the towers, Jay?
No, hell no. I've
heard stories. It was like they shut them down like 2 years before I got here.
Yeah, they were up and running when I was there, man. And we had some friends in the towers or whatnot. And I remember on moving day in camp, we used to help people move in, football players or whatnot. And I'm thinking, like, man, you guys, you're living on like the 20th floor of a tower. I'm glad they knocked them down. I'm sure everybody's glad they knocked them down.
Yeah. It took them a while to do that.
They were like a staple.
Yes.
On that side of Lexington, you get close enough, you can see the towers.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of the day, the living conditions in there, man, opposed to, what was – because I lived in Baldwin Hall. So
okay.
When I moved in to Smith and Baldwin are next to each other, right?
Yeah, that's where – those are the ones that are – they're not bad, but where they put the teams last year. Those are the ones, yeah.
Right. So we lived in Smith in summer of 12. We moved to Baldwin for fall of 12. And spring of 13, where the freshmen stayed. Now, you have football players in Smith. He had some in Baldwin, had some. And what was the one next to Baldwin?
Oh, man. Let's pull it up right here. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They all look alike. They like the
triplets. Yes. Inglis.
Inglis, yeah. So, Ingles. Yeah, it was Ingles.
Ingles, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I lived on North Side campus when there was a new dorm.
Across the street, when we moved in 2012, across the street, I had the worst dorms on campus by far.
Right.
Right across the street from in the parking lot there, across the street from Ingles, Baldwin, and Smith. And they knocked those down, and before I left, they had already built the new ones.
Yes, and the new ones are insane for a college.
Yeah. Yeah, and the freshmen that came in, they got a chance to stay in those.
Yes.
And whatnot. And I'd never even been in them because they had just got done right before I left.
I gotcha.
To my knowledge, they have even newer dorms on campus, right?
Yeah, I lived on in Jewel, which is right where Blazer Dining used to be. They closed closed Blazer Dining after my first semester at UK, but I lived right across the street there in Jewel, my freshman year.
So Blazer was close to the Coliseum?
Yes, right across.
Yeah. So.
And that building, by the way, the Blazer Dining Building is now the journalism school because Grehan got bought by engineering. So I got 1 year at Grehan, and then I was – all my classes, at least, major-wise, were in that Blazer – in the old Blazer dorm rooms. Like, the classrooms were the meeting rooms, and the teachers' offices were old dorm rooms. It was insane. Wow, and they're still in there. So some of my buddies who are, just finished up college or Cole Park from the Colonel, one of my good buddies there, they still have to take classes in that godforsaken building.
Because they had this student center or student union.
Yes.
Was across from Coliseum right there on the right.
Now the brand new student. Well, not it, I guess it, now 6 years old, but yeah.
It was pretty cool when, you know, we had the old one. And the old one was cool. I mean, had a movie theater. I mean, yeah. It was nice that the school store was nice and whatnot in there. And, you know, now there's a new one, which I've never been in a new one.
Yeah, you got to see that thing. That opened up right, like, the last week of my freshman year.
Yeah. But the good thing was, you know, we were the old Nutter.
Yes. Okay. Right. So
we were an old Nutter football facility and whatnot. I mean, we had guys. I remember when I got there, we had guys. I'm not going to say the names, a few of them. Who, I mean, if the lift started at 7, they would wake up at like 6:55. and haul tail over there, man, because we were close, and you know, get dressed and whatnot. But you know, some good days, man. I remember because we thought we had it good living in Smith and Baldwin. We had the brand new dorms at the time we were freshmen, but now those are, you know, like not the brand new dorms anymore. But it's crazy how much building and refurbishing is going on around there, man.
Yeah, it's making it be such a completely new place when you do come back, man.
Everything. I hadn't seen anything. The stadium, new football facility, new dorms, new student union or student center. You know, I got a lot to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sure. The main question too, like I said, not a whole lot going on, but everybody that is online is going to be refreshing Twitter.
Yeah.
With the whole Jackson Robinson coming out the draft, coming to Kentucky, what are we doing? So that's...
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's what's on most people's minds.
Yeah, Kentucky basketball fans are not, they're familiar with this process. I think the one that stands out to me was Hamidou Diallo took until literally like 11:59 to announce he was coming back. He was an earlier enrollee, and then, you know, was able to enter the draft, go through the process, and decide to pull out. You know, he played 1 year here, obviously. So it's kind of a similar situation to that with Jackson Robinson. He's got a little over 2 hours here, a little over 2.5 hours till that midnight deadline to make a decision. So, and again, I think to preface it, it's not a slam dunk that he comes to Kentucky if he pulls his name out. Obviously, the history there, you know, with Mark Pope the last 2 years, it's going to be, you know, Kentucky's going to be very much in the mix. They're going to be able to offer him a substantial NIL package because they're Kentucky. But, you know, Kansas is very much going to be involved. I've heard Johnny Furphy, who kind of played the same position for him last year, just announced he's staying in the draft, which is not a humongous surprise, but one that did come until the last day. So they officially have to replace his spot. And then they also lost Riley Kugel, who committed there out of the portal, decided not to enroll, and he's going to Mississippi State instead. So, you know, they have a need for another scorer there in Kansas, and he's from Oklahoma. That's obviously, you know, much closer to home than Kentucky is. And then BYU, you know, with Kevin Young. And I think, Vinny, we talked about it last week when we were waiting on Chaz Lanier, who obviously picked Tennessee. Like, we kind of thought he probably would. But BYU hired Kevin Young, who has been, you know, the right-hand man with the Suns, and is a guy that Devin Booker, who not just here at Kentucky, but across the basketball landscape, holds a lot of weight and is very much admired by young basketball players. And so I think they're going to have a chance to talk with Jackson and make their pitch as well to keep him in Provo. They still have four or five spots open on that team. And he's obviously familiar with a lot of guys on the roster that decided to stay. So I don't think it's a slam dunk he ends up at Kentucky. I think Kentucky has a really good chance. Obviously, I would say they're the slight favorite even, but I think it's important to keep in mind, even if he does withdraw, which I tend to think he will. I know there's been talk of him setting up visits. So usually that's kind of a telltale sign that, you know, that he's going to pull his name out, you know, could happen literally while we're on the show any second here. But just keep in mind, like, there's going to be a little bit of a process. There's going to be a recruitment. I don't expect Cody Feger to come out with a boom tweet tonight, tomorrow, or the next day. Like, we're in for – I don't know how long. I'm sure he'll move pretty quickly here. I know Kentucky gets its team on campus by June 10th. I'm sure other schools are starting to do that process this week, next week, the week after that. So I don't think he's gonna wait too long. He's definitely been recruited throughout this whole thing. He has an idea of who the suitors are gonna be. But just keep in mind, like, you gotta have an open mind. Like, this is not a Jackson Robinson is withdrawing and returning to Kentucky. Like, Hamidou Diallo, we all knew if he was withdrawing, he'd go to Kentucky. Like, this is okay, he's withdrawing, and now he's going to go find his school. And it could be Kentucky. It could be Kansas. It could be BYU. Maybe another school steps in. Who knows?
And can't really be mad at Chaz Lanier either, because no. We just had the kids from Kentucky do the same thing. Travis Perry stayed at Kentucky, even though the coaching change happened. Trent Noah, when the coaching change happened, was able to get out of his NLI to South Carolina. And so Chaz Lanier is from Nashville. He went to his home state school, so can't be mad at him for doing the same thing that the Kentucky kids on the roster did as well. So would you love to have him? Could he possibly be that bucket getter, that missing piece that everybody wants on the roster?
Sure.
Possibly. But I'm not sweating it. Even if you don't get Robinson, I'm not sweating it, because, you know, if the coaching staff was incompetent and just goofing off and not doing anything, right. We've seen what they've done in a short amount of time.
Absolutely.
We've seen all the booms. They're still getting moved in and already on the job. So if that wasn't the case, then, okay, maybe you have reason to worry. But, sure. You know, they are – about that business of putting together a roster and in a short amount of time, not a lot of pieces, and they've done a great job. And even if they don't get a bucket getter, I think with the pieces they have, they're still going to be competitive and they're going to be all right. So I'm not sweating it. And look, me worrying ain't going to help anyway. So, you know what I mean?
It's not, obviously. It's not. But it's just, look, you got to think of it like, neither Jackson Robinson – Chaz Lanier is a little bit different because he's playing in North Florida, right? So it's hard to know just how impactful he's going to be now on the big stage at Tennessee. He had one amazing year last year, but before that didn't do much his first three. But again, you know, Tennessee, that's his home state. It's a great get for them. I still have some questions about their roster, but I think obviously he helps them a lot and solidifies some things at least. But more importantly, with Kentucky, I think there's two things important to keep in mind here. I think one, even like Jackson Robinson would be a great player that would probably be your number one option on paper, can really probably raise the ceiling of this team at least slightly. But, you know, at BYU last year, which you look at the two rosters, it's pretty comparable just from a who would you rather have roster, right? Because, I mean, this was BYU was a very good team in the Big 12 that was a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, they were no pushover. They obviously had a tough loss to Duquesne, and that can't be ignored, but they had a really good season. And obviously, Jackson Robinson was their best player, but wasn't enough to quite push them over the edge to that cream of the crop in the Big 12 and in the NCAA tournament. Can he do that here? Where I do think overall, probably it is a little bit of a more high ceiling, definitely more experienced roster, maybe. But I don't think he's a guy that you can say either is a slam dunk. He's going to be incredible at all, because again, the Big 12 is really good. He was the Big 12 player of the year, but it's a different beast here at Kentucky. And look at the SEC right now, man. It is the way Alabama just got Mark Sears back. They were already the preseason favorites to win the conference. Now they get the best player that's coming back to the conference, right, with Kinect and Reeves leaving. Ole Miss is loaded going into this season. They're Arkansas, as much as you want to say, like, they're going to be, you know, Cal's not going to – they're not going to be a pushover. They're going to be a good basketball team. They're going to be an NCAA tournament team that could have the ceiling to make a second weekend. And you just go down the list. It is it's a tough league. So Jackson Robinson's going to be walking into something that I think is a little bit of even a step up from the Big 12. So he's not a slam dunk to be, and he was also a sixth man. So he's coming off the bench, where I would think he'd be your starting two or three on this team. So there's still some questions even then if they add him. I don't think it changes. I think it does raise the ceiling, but not enough where if you lose them, you should be sweating. And like you said, there's nothing you can do about it, so don't worry about it. But there's also, you know, Will Riley, the freshman, is a guy that maybe you're still able to get and reclassify. They have a 13th roster spot, you know, if they want to get two high upside guys. There are different ways around it if they don't get Jackson Robinson, but you'd love to have the most proven guy out there.
Absolutely. We talked about them. Meetings in Destin going on, and you know, these questions just couldn't help be asked. But you know, Calipari says that he thinks the Pope hire is a great hire by Kentucky. I mean, I don't know what you, even if he didn't, what do you think he's gonna say? Or you probably wouldn't expect him to be petty or throw shots right there, but you know,
yeah,
even if he doesn't think it is, he said it was a great hire. So, and we saw him at the I don't know if it's a draft combine or whatever, they were, you know, hanging out. So there's that. And that's just going to be a recurring little theme throughout the season. Anytime.
That game when Arkansas is here at Rupp, it'll just keep building and building and building. But again, there's more than just Arkansas to worry about in this SEC, man. It is, you know, I just said Alabama and Ole Miss were the ones that jumped off the top of my head, but Florida's got that entire guard room back, plus Elijah Martin. They're going to be a force. Auburn has a lot of pieces intact, and Jahni Broome leading the way there. Tennessee's still going to be a really good basketball team. A&M, I think Wade Taylor, believe it or not, and who's the other one? I think Tyrese Radford and Wade Taylor are still there, if I'm not mistaken. Could be wrong. No, yeah, they're coming back. So A&M is going to be a force. I think Georgia has a chance to be slightly better. Vanderbilt is not going to be a pushover like they were last year, you know, with the new coach in there and some of the pieces they've been able to add. So it's a deep South Carolina, you know, it's turning into what it is in football and basketball, slowly but surely.
And it's crazy that it feels like Broome has been at Auburn for like 6 years already. And you already mentioned Taylor. And I mean, you remember him transferring from Morehead State down there. And it feels like, man, he's still down there. So,
yeah, no, I mean, Wade Taylor and Radford coming back is crazy. Feels like those two guys have been there for 7 years. And obviously, there's some recency bias that Kentucky got beat by. Yeah. But
they're dogs, man.
Radford might be out of years now that I'm looking at it. He's 25, so he better be out of years. Taylor will be back.
Eddie says, if UK strikes it on Robinson, I still feel good about the roster as it currently stands. 11 good players that can shoot. I think the world is really sleeping on Chandler. Yeah,
Yeah, I think he has a ton of upside. It's a little hard to know because he hasn't picked up a bat. Well, now he has, but, you know, once they signed him, he hadn't really played much basketball in 2 years, at least not competitively. Maybe not at all. I don't know how that stuff works with his, you know, his mission trip and whatnot. But, yeah, I think he's a sneaky piece, whether it's this year or next year, that can really impact this team. The guy I'm super high on that I just don't think gets enough credit still, and I think it's just because he's not necessarily a shooter per se, is Lamont Butler. I mean, that's just that's a winning player right there. We all know he's the defensive player of the year in the Mountain West last year. But, you know, he's a guy who's played 11 or 12 or 13 NCAA tournament games. And obviously he hit the clutch shot against FAU, but you just look at his numbers throughout those NCAA tournament games. I mean, even this year, scoring 15 in their first round game. I mean, he's a guy that just goes out and produces in the biggest stages and can do a little bit of everything. And, you know, he's not a great shooter, but he's not an awful shooter either. He can do a little bit of everything at that point guard spot. So I think, you know, he's a huge one. Andrew Carr fits exactly what they want to do. We know Kobe Bray is a coin flip shooter. So there are a lot of good pieces on this team. Is it a top 25 team? Probably. Is it a top 15 team? Probably not. But for year one of remember what the reaction was the night he got hired. It was all hell broke loose. The program's dead, whatever. For year one, given what he's been able to assemble when he walked in, really zero players, because I know Travis Perry was signed, but you still have to go and re-recruit him and affirm to him that you want him here. He's done pretty much as well as you could ask for here. And it is also important to remember it is year one. You can't go 4-28. You can't go 10-20, right? But you can, if you make the NCAA tournament year one, it's not going to be Tubby Smith and it's not going to be Kenny Payne. It's got to be a lot better than Kenny Payne. It doesn't have to be Tubby Smith, and who obviously inherited a lot of those pieces, but still winning a natty year one. It's just, I understand Mark Pope he's saying all the right things about expectations, and he's going to call the season failure if they don't win at all, which is great and refreshing. But it is important to keep in mind, like, this is year one. This is a pieces that have never played together before, ever. Like, I don't even know if Trent Noah and Travis Perry played any AAU together. I think they always played against each other. So it's, you know, there's a lot of working parts that it's going to be a grind, but there's also a lot to like.
Absolutely. Of course, we're live, as y'all know, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Believe in Kentucky. Follow us. Got our Linktree stuff there on Believe in Kentucky on the Twitter page. It gives you access to the Instagram and TikTok and all the other platforms. So we appreciate the comments. Appreciate when y'all interact as well. So keep on doing that. Subscribe and follow everything and keep up with all the episodes that we put out. And we definitely appreciate it. You also got merch as well. Go to shop.believe.com, shop.BLEAV.com. Got the Cat Daddy shirts available in blue and white and gray. And we got those Everts to Eddyville shirts for Trent Noah and Travis Perry being from the east and west side of the state of Kentucky. So go and get yourself some merch, and definitely appreciate that as well. Josh put a comment. We talked about those guys being Jani Broom being there for a long time, saying they're the new Perry Ellis because he played at Kansas for 63 years.
And that was before the COVID years.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like he's still playing.
It might be.
He was a fixture on that Jayhawks roster for decades.
No, I
forgot about Perry Ellis. Perry Ellis old as hell, man.
I was wrong on Radford. He's my age, so again, I'm hoping you would be done by now.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, I graduated college, going to be coming up on 4 years, or is 4 years. But yeah, Wade Taylor is going to be back there. Anderson Garcia, just looking through it. A lot of guys that Solomon Washington, just guys we've heard down there in College Station. Henry Coleman, just very, very, very familiar names. That's college basketball in 2024. And Taylor's only a true fourth year, so it is what it is.
And Buzz just maximizes what he has, even if they kind of scuffle through the regular season. You know, come tournament time, or SEC tournament time at least, he kind of maximizes. You know, they've went out of tournament early a few times in March, but he still just, it feels like he always gets the most out of what he has, and he has some pretty good talent down there too most of the time as well. So, and definitely had our number last year, as we know, like you said, that recency bias for sure, Aaron. One thing we say for Jalen, though, we talked about it. We messaged each other about it, but didn't say it during the episode, was that James Franklin, the allegations about him, you know, kind of coercing or whatever you want to say, it's about the medical staff as far as guys were injured, manipulating, imposing his will, whatever you want to call it. Philadelphia Inquirer had a story about a couple of former medical staff people talking about that with Mr. Franklin. So we saved that for when you were back, Jalen.
Sure. Yeah, that was crazy. But like I told y'all, you know, pre-show, that I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, that type of thing, if I had to guess, man, that type of thing go on a lot. So, you know, again, it's always a touchy subject when you're dealing with people's health, especially nowadays with the mental health part too, because we all know that the physical health of an athlete is directly tied to the mental health of the athlete. When they can't touch the field or they feel like they're being forced back onto the field when they're not ready, is a problem, because like I said, it's directly linked to the mental health. But anytime you're manipulating medical things, I should say, it's never good. You know, he can get in some trouble with that, but like I said, man, this is a thing that I'm sure goes on everywhere. I mean, I've been on teams where it kind of went on, where, you know, I've seen guys with injuries who probably shouldn't be back on the field yet, but they're back on the field. You know, so it happens. You know, you don't ever want to see that, especially you can get into the concussion thing too, because now, you know, what type of coach are you really when you know a guy has a concussion or some type of neck or head injury, and you're forcing the issue to get them back on the field? Do you really value these people as human beings at the end of the day? And that's what a lot of players now look at more than ever. Parents now look at more than ever. Because I could be honest with you, man, when I was coming out of high school, we didn't even, we didn't even care about it. At the end of the day, I mean, it was a little bit different. And this was only 2012, 2011. And it was a little bit different. Now, people are much more aware. I think social media, just the new studies that come out about concussions and, you know, brain injuries and CTE and that whole thing has changed some things. But any injury, right, you never want to manipulate the process and push kids back on the field before they're ready, or, you know, even manipulate the process and hold kids off the field when they are ready, because I firsthand experienced that. So it's coaches are really, really powerful at these Power Four schools. It's funny to say Power Four now.
Yeah.
Coaches are really powerful at these Power Four schools. They are some of the highest paid, state employees
Absolutely. And
not only that, they hold – I mean, if you're talking Alabama, Nick Saban, when Nick Saban was at Alabama, he's probably the most powerful person in the state. You can say whoever else you want to say, but at the end of the day, when people think about Alabama, they think about Nick Saban. You say Penn State, you think James Franklin. Or you say Pennsylvania, you think Penn State. You think Penn State, you think football. You think football, you think James Franklin. And these people are extremely powerful and extremely influential and, mm-hmm. you know, and have a lot of pull. And they can get things done because you always got to think, if I'm that trainer, maybe it's my first few years doing it. Maybe I'm not really into the I'm not really tenured that well. And I'm brand new or whatever the case may be. You always have in the back of your mind, at the end of the day, this person can get me fired if I don't do what he want me to do.
Right.
This person can get me out of here. I could not have a job if I don't push this player back on the field before he's ready. And now I'm part of it. Now I've been, kind of linked to something that has nothing to do with me, but it does. So it's just a whole slippery slope, man. And you get college football and football in general at the high levels, dirty, dirty business. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Call a spade, man. It's dirty business. It's dirty. It's really dirty. If people knew the things that goes on behind the scenes, you would be floored, man. It's just a dirty business. And it goes from coaches to trainers to what happens with the players to what happens with boosters and fans to what happens with collectors, NIL, to everything, every part of it. Let's just keep call a spade. It is dirty, man. It's dirty. And let's, just imagine what happens in the NFL. But just talking college football, it is a dirty game. And the things that happen behind closed doors, are just dirty and nasty, man. And you'll be amazed at where people would go to get things done. And it's kind of sad, especially when you're dealing with a young man's or a young woman's health. So it gets tricky. So doesn't surprise me at all. But, we'll see what happens. I wouldn't be shocked if nothing happened. And if I had to guess, if I had to bet, nothing will happen behind it if I had to bet on it. So that's just how I feel about it, man. So, like I said, doesn't shock me at all when I saw it, to be honest with you. I quickly read some of the excerpts from an article, and I just kept on scrolling. I just kept on going through because at the end of the day, nothing really surprised me when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah. So, and that's why, my thing with Dabo, he tried to act like he's squeaky clean and all this dirt. Don't do that when you right here with everybody else in the dirt, but acting like you just Teflon.
Dabo had 5 years where he was in the top 3, 4, 5 of college football. You ain't doing that unless, there's some dirt somewhere. And it may not be bad dirt compared to Penn State, compared to whoever else, right? It may not be as bad of dirt as them, but it's dirt. Playing around in dirt, you get mud, right? That's what DMX said, and it's just the truth, man. Like it's a dirty game. So to compete, you have to bend the rules somewhere. You have to play dirty somewhere. Everybody's doing it. There's no clean football program out there at the Power Four level. None, zero. If you do enough auditing, you're gonna find dirt. It's just what it is. And Dabo, Dabo is a guy who seemed like, I don't know him, so I'm not going to really put this on him, but it just seemed like sometimes he come off as holier than thou.
Yeah.
And we all know that's a hell no, because it just don't happen at this level. Wake Forest has dirt. And Wake Forest don't win anything, significant. They have, everybody is trying to compete. There's a lot of people's lives on the line. There's a lot of people's money on the line. There's a lot of people's career on the line. And I was listening to, what's the head coach at University of South Florida name?
Golish.
I was listening to Golish talk, and he had a clinic on his podcast I listened to. Not a clinic, but he was on a podcast and whatnot. And he was just talking about how, as an offensive coordinator, he was responsible for, X amount of people. Not very many. And as a head coach, over 200 people every day. Every decision he makes 200 people or more are going to, you know, deal with the ramifications of his decision that he made. So you know for a fact that, you know, when you're dealing with that much influence, that much power, there's going to be some things that happen that, you know, may be against rules or morals or ethics. And that's just the truth. And like I said, I've seen it firsthand in high school and college. You know, I've seen things happen. Now, I didn't see anything on this level as bad, but I've seen things happen to where you're like, man, that's crazy. You know, isn't there a cleaner way to do it? But, you know, I guess not, man. I guess, like I said, everybody's trying to compete. You know, everybody, you know, it's crazy. So nothing will probably happen from it. And if it does, I'll be more shocked if something did happen rather than the opposite.
Where are you at on the new helmet communication? And if you were a quarterback now, would you want more communication, or would you feel that would kind of clutter you up, or you know?
I wouldn't want it. I'll take that back. I'm not going to say I wouldn't want it. I never tried it to say I wouldn't want it. However, as a coach, I wouldn't want it. I know that for a fact. I know how I was as a player, and, you know, and if I did have it, I would only want the play. You know, I don't want any other information. You know, I don't like being bombarded with information in the heat of the moment. I know what to do. I put in the time. I studied. I know the plays. I know what the defense is doing. I got a good idea of what's going on. I don't like all the extra communication, you know, myself. But, hey, that's just me. I know some people who – I was listening to a guy who said, you know, some quarterbacks, they want the play and they want every ounce of communication that they could possibly get up until that thing shuts off at 15 seconds or whatever it is. So that's just me, though. I'm, you know, I don't like – now, you got to get some schools like Tennessee, they're not really even using it much. You know, some teams believe that it could help them go faster, like Ole Miss. I know Lane Kiff was talking about that. But, you know, some schools are not going to use it as much. Some schools are going to use it more on defense than they do offense, and believe it or not. So, you know, we'll see. You know, I just – it wouldn't be my thing as a coach. As a player, I don't know because I never really got a chance to experience it. But I know as a coach, I just wouldn't want to add. And I know how I am. I don't want to be talking to the quarterback's ear during the game. You know, I know for quarterbacks that could probably get annoying too. And they, you know, it's just, I don't know, man. That's just me. I'm kind of old school though in a lot of ways. So, you know, I like the signaling. I think that's good enough. Again, there is a level of stealing signals and, you know, that affecting the game, especially when you're doing it to the sophistication of Michigan. And we just talk about the dirty things that happen in college football. You know, if you're doing it to that level, yeah, you can affect games. However, it is hard-pressed for a team to steal a signal, their coach to relay it to their players in time so he can relay it to the rest of the guys before the ball snap. That's just hard to do. Now, if they're doing what Michigan is doing, they're watching you weeks in advance, and they got guys in shades and hats on the sideline.
That don't make it easy.
I mean, if they go on that far, then damn. I mean, they can really, you know, influence. But I just think it's hard, man. Especially when you got a team that's playing with any tempo. Now, if you're playing like Kentucky did last year, and you may be able to get it in time and whatnot, but. If you're playing with any tempo,
right.
Good luck trying to get that signal, process it, or send it in to a guy on the field, or the guy on the field somehow get it, and then relay that to the players before the ball snaps so they can get lined up to where they want to be. I mean, realistically, I've been playing football all my life, been coaching for 8 years now, and I just don't see it happening. Even defensive coordinators tell me that. He was like, look, we could get your signals all we want to. It's hard as hell to get that thing on the field and get it communicated to all 11 players before the ball is snapped. You can't. It's hard to do it. Now it may help you as far as making adjustments, like at halftime or on the sideline. Say, hey, if y'all hear this call or if y'all happen to see this signal, this is what's coming. But now you're asking players on the field to see multiple things and get multiple calls and try to listen for their calls and their own team's call. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So you're dealing with a lot. So
yep.
That's my thing. I know some people may say, hey, that's BS. Some coaches may say, you know, they don't see it that way, but that's just how I see it. You know, just because I signal our plays, and you know, I don't care if the other team see our signals. I really don't. You know, see it, get it to your players in time before the ball gets snapped, and then if you do that, then you know we need to find something else to do.
So you super, super tempo with your offense. You really quick.
And practice extremely fast. And I think we need to get as many reps as possible, but we don't always play like that in the game. If I were at a school where we had 100 and something players where we don't have to play guys both ways, we would play extremely, extremely fast. But I haven't been at a school yet to where we have the numbers to really do that. You know, we got a few guys playing both sides of the ball.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And you can still do it in spots. So we pick our spots. Now, we don't snap the ball with 3 seconds left on the play clock, but we pick our spots to when we want to go fast and whatnot, and we can use pseudo-tempo, you know, huddling and breaking the huddle fast and getting lined up fast. So you can kind of break the huddle whenever you want because you're still using tempo, but just in a different way. You know, you're lining up fast after you're breaking the huddle, and now the defense is scrambling to figure out what the strength of formation is to try and get set. So that's a way to use it. It's a way to use it coming off the field. So like first and 10 of a start of a new drive, you can get them to huddle and break the huddle and do it that way as well. That's how some teams use. You see some of those tempo teams, like sometimes Tennessee does this, or a team like Ole Miss may do this, where they can't huddle on after a kickoff or punt on first and 10. They can't tempo you really. But how they can do it is they can get in the huddle and break that huddle and cause you to have to make to communicate and make adjustments on the fly. And that's one way they use like pseudo tempo on like a first and, or P and 10. After you know, a change of possession. So, you know, we try to implement those things. I think it's a weapon. I mean, the rules allow us to use them, so we try to use them. You know, so that's how we do it. But no, we don't play like Tennessee fast the entire game. You know, with the numbers that we have, we got a few guys that play both ways. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you need them in the fourth quarter. So you got to kind of be smart and pick your spots when you want to use it. That's how we kind of do it.
Makes sense. And you know, you don't want to nerd out or drop out his knowledge, but we appreciate that, man.
that's just, you know, like I won't say basic stuff, but you know, if you watch football, you know, people who really, you know, are analytical when they watch it, you know, they pick up on that stuff. I mean, you know, you can see it, you know, where teams, you know, try to use it. And you got teams who believe, you know, like this argument, and y'all probably see it on social media. Y'all remember the Chris Sims, John Gruden clip?
Yeah.
Where he gives him, you know, a 20-word play call or whatnot. And there are people who believe that that's better than having a one-word play call. And they believe that because if I could just tell everybody what to do, isn't that the simplest way of communicating to everybody what they're doing? To send in a play in, if I could just say, hey, whatever, you know, 200 jet F this, H this, Y this, T this, whatever. And they kind of go down the line and pretty much tell everybody what they have to do. Or you have a number system where you say, hey, you know, 379, you know, F scat or F angle, whatever that is. You just told everybody by numbers what everybody has. So some people believe that's simpler than just sending in a one or two word play call. So everybody, it's just philosophy at the end of the day, right? Everybody has a different philosophy. Liam Cohen believed in both. He had one word play calls and tempo calls, and he had plays to where they got super wordy. And he had plays, not only did they get wordy, but they'll send two or three plays in a huddle. So they'll send two or three plays into Levis or the quarterback that was just playing just past year.
O'Leary.
Yeah, Leary. And he'll call two or three plays in a huddle, and they can kill to go to the next play and maybe kill to go to the third one or alert to go to the next one or alert to go to the third one. So everybody has different philosophies at the end of the day, man. It really just depends on, you know, how did you kind of come up? What did you believe in? I'm pretty sure it's the same thing in whatever you guys do with your work. Everybody has different philosophies on how they do things. And no philosophy is wrong. There's people who win national championships with 20 word play calls. There's been people who, like Clemson, who've won a national championship on a play call that was literally three words on their game-winning touchdown pass to Hunter Renfrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody, you know, it really don't matter. What do you believe in? Can you make the team believe in it? Can you make the coaches believe in it? And can you execute it at the end of the day?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A couple more little comments. Actually, should make the most fiscal commitment by doing it.
During can't do that on Friday. Can't do that when there's a deadline, but you know, it's got 2 hours. We got 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, does it look like Oregon for Wooga Poplar?
It's Maybe. Hard to know. I know there's been some talks and some reports out there that you know he might be trying to line up a visit to Kentucky to Arkansas, but you know. Right now, the only visit set is Oregon. He took one to Villanova. He's a Philly kid. So it's hard to know exactly if, you know, that's a let's drive up the price and involve Kentucky and Arkansas, who are obviously two of the bigger NIL, powerhouses there are in the country. Or is it, you know, is it serious that maybe they haven't lined up a visit because Kentucky's, you know, waiting on Robinson first? Who knows? But I guess you got to still consider him an option until he's officially off the board. And then, you know, it's Jackson Robinson's obviously the top target. I think Will Riley, you know, the freshman or 2025 prospect who very well might reclassify to 24 is probably number two on that list. And then Poplar, but Poplar's a really good player. Obviously was a kind of similar to Lamont Butler where he was, you know, a huge part of a deep March run and has that March experience. That would be pretty significant to add, but it's hard to really know where he's at. He's kind of the guy I've heard the least about the last couple of weeks.
Interesting stuff. He's a little bit before, well, definitely before y'all's time as a player, even before my time as a player, but Bill Walton passed away.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, look, I was a kid at the tail end, like when the Celtics won it in 86. I was little when he was, you know, already kind of banged up and had been through a ton of surgeries and all that at the end of his career then. Won a title in 77 with Portland on the 86 Boston team that won it. Of course, it was a beast at UCLA. When you get Kareem and then, well, Lou Alcindor / Kareem and then Walton back-to-back. I mean, no wonder they won 8-10 titles in a row at UCLA out there in that run in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. The young kids know Bill Walton as the announcer if you stay up late watching Pac-12 games. Yeah, Pac-12 after dark. And he
wild, you know, obviously not to make light, it's just – crazy how that works where he obviously he's kind of the I would say he's the face of the Pac-12 honestly, like, you know, he obviously no one was a bigger advocate Pac-12 after dark, you know, basketball games, conference champions, but they, you know, they played their last event over the weekend. The baseball tournament was the last ever Pac-12 event. And then, you know, you have this happen. It's just, it's crazy how that type of thing happens. But yeah, I mean, obviously he played before our times here, but obviously he was a treat to listen in on these games. As good a person, as big and fun a personality as a color commentator as I've ever watched before. So obviously cancer didn't even, I guess, I don't know how long he'd been battling. I honestly wasn't too familiar with the situation beforehand, but definitely was really shocked when that, you know, that news hit the timeline on Monday. And you know, condolences all around there. And that's a guy who's irreplaceable in the college basketball, in basketball landscape.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like you said, I never got a chance to watch him, but, you know, I definitely remember, you know, staying up and watch some of those basketball games and whatnot. And, you know, and even just his influence in the NBA and, you know, his commentating and whatnot, just, you know, college and NBA, man. I mean, you never want to hear, you know, anybody go out, you know, like that. You know, you want people to go out, you know, kind of on their own terms due to age and whatnot. That's what you would rather want. So, you know, definitely condolences to his family and friends and, you know, colleagues and, you know, everybody. You know, you don't want that to happen. But he definitely left a legacy behind him, though. I mean, even his son, you know what I'm saying? Like, people forget about his son was a – his son played in the NBA. And people – it's easy to forget about that because, you know, he really wasn't, you know – he didn't stand out much, but he was on those teams with Kobe Bryant and whatnot. And, you know, yeah. Luke played in the NBA and was a good player in college, you know. So, you know, so you just hate to hear that, man. But like I said, he definitely left a mark on a lot of people and left his legacy, man, on the game. And I'm sure just on people he's touched in general. So, yeah.
And all the, you know, all the tribute stuff, you know, the stories of stuff about just how good a person he was, how he was always in a good mood, always happy, even though, you know, maybe the commentating would maybe come by left field with that little Grateful Dead flavor and all that. But all the just he made you feel comfortable around him. He was friendly. He was nice. That even kind of superseded him as a player, and he was a Hall of Fame player. So just the fact that what he was as a person was, you know, by everybody that he came into contact with, you know, it tells what type of guy he was. And then all this other stuff that, you know, the basketball and the commentating, was just a good dude. And just leading all the little tributes, like Rich Eisen had a story about him and they did a music video. And then he's helping carry Walton's big old chair that he would carry because he, you know, he had knee and back issues, and he crams it into his Tesla and the chair breaks the glass in the car. And then, so he's apologized. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And it said when Eisen got home, like a month later, Walton sends him a personal letter apologizing and a check for the damages. And of course, Eisen said, I'm never going to cash this check. I mean, it was an honor just to even be with him. And, you know, and then he writes out a letter and a check himself, you know, just that's the kind of dude he was. So just that stuff like that, you scroll through. Sad that you see all that kind of stuff after somebody passes. Most of the time you get all these, all these great stories, all these wonderful interactions. But, you know, it was cool reading and hearing some of that kind of stuff that people said. So, yeah, good stuff, y'all. As always, Aaron Gershon, Cat's Pose, the yearbook, the articles, the beat, the inside info you get, everything you share, we appreciate that. Get the QB back with us this evening. Got some thoughts from him. Got some insights. He's not a fan of the helmet. He don't want everybody, don't be talking and giving me too much information. Just give me what I need. Give me the play so I can do my thing. Got some insight as to how you are coaching. You're not that old, but you're old school, and now you're coaching new school kids. So you got to kind of adjust to the TikTok kids who might want that information and want every little drip. So cool seeing how you're going to balance that. And we'll see what happens with Jackson Robinson. We'll see what happens with this baseball team this weekend. Hopefully, it's a lot of Kentucky proud moments happening on the horizon with Kentucky hosting the regional and super regionals and real close to doing some more historic stuff on top of what they've already done. So
absolutely. It's going to be a challenge. I think fans got to realize this is not an easy regional, but it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this weekend.
Absolutely. Last little comment, has Jackson withdrew? Not to our knowledge.
Not yet.
Not yet. So
nothing yet. So, you know, he's got an hour. We should know in the next, you know, hour and 50 minutes or so, but we're still waiting.
That's right. So just hop on and go along for the ride, and we'll be back with another episode. We do this every week, and if we need to do emergency ones, we do that as well. And look, remember we talked about that autograph app during March Madness. Still go on there and check it out. You can get all your UK stuff on one app or the autograph. And look, tweet them at autograph and tell them, hey, heard about it on Believe in Kentucky podcast. This app is really cool. I get all my podcasts. Our podcast is included on there. I get to read Aaron's articles and other articles on there. It's all right there. You're doing stuff you'd normally be doing anyway. So for Jalen Whitlow and Gershon, my name is Vinny Hardy. Appreciate y'all commenting and live streaming and checking us out. We'll be back next week with another episode. This has been Believe in Kentucky on the Believe Podcast Network. Everybody have a good rest of what's left for y'all's night. We'll holler at y'all next week.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.